Welcome back, or welcome to, the Single Track Podcast. I'm your host, Finn Melanson, and in this episode, I am joined by Brett Hornig and Leah Yingling to recap some of our favorite storylines, moments, and trends from 2022 in the sport of mountain ultra trail running. We also analyze our Ultra Runner of the Year picks and conclude with some predictions for all things 2023 as well. Before we get started, this episode is brought to you by Gnarly Nutrition. Use code SINGLETRACK20 at checkout for 20% off your next order, and also by Kodiak Cakes. Use code SINGLETRACK15 at checkout there for 15% off your next order. With that, let's get started. I think this is going to be my favorite episode of 2022. It's our end of the year, favorite storylines, year in review, ultra runner of the year, trail runner of the year analysis. I'm joined by frequent co-hosts Brett Hornig and Leah Yingling. Leah, before we hit record, we had like a 30-minute pre-record here, which I wish we had gotten on the record, but that's okay.
Nope.
You said no, we probably can't. But you said we should talk about the highlight of our years before we dive into all this stuff. So for you, what was it? Because on paper, you had one of the best years of anybody in our sport, I would say.
Oh, why did you have to start with me? Yeah, I think I can't not say Western States. I think just getting to there and experiencing that in its entirety. I mean, sharing miles with Brett, that had to have been the highlight. So yeah, it was the whole experience itself was just a complete highlight for me. And I think especially the journey of getting there. So racing into that with a couple golden ticket attempts was pretty special.
I got to share race miles with both of you this year.
That's right.
How cool is that? Like going up the escarpment with Leah and then never seeing her again. And then getting Finn as a pacer for lap 4 of Javelina. I mean, those are definitely highlights. I mean, from a racing standpoint, the Javelina 100, I mean, that's like probably, I mean, that I think that is the best trail race, perhaps even the best race I've ever had. So that's going on the highlight reel for the year for sure. But then one of the other big highlights, honestly, was getting to become a part of the Single Track Podcast. Like, that was huge, and it's been so fun. And, you know, it's been just so cool to be a part of this whole adventure and talk about running.
I think my two were the first, almost getting dropped by you, Brett, on the fourth lap of Javelina. Like, I now know exactly what it looks like when people like you and Leah in the sport can still be on that competitive edge and hard charging, and I hop in as a pacer and I am thoroughly humbled like 16 miles in. I was gasping for air. So that was number one. Just that revelation I had. And then the second one, I think, yeah, to echo what you said about single track, starting this portion of the podcast with you and Leah has been such a pleasure. It's probably the episode I look forward to, however often we do it, once a month, once every couple of weeks. And I hope that we can take the momentum and the rapport and the flow we've built into 2023 with hopefully many good things to come. So I'm starting off this podcast corny as hell, but I mean it.
I think this is the episode for that. I mean, I'm wearing a Christmas sweater.
I realized I don't own a Christmas sweater. I need to
I don't either. Yeah. Just you, Brett.
I have two.
Well, let me run down. This is our index for the episode. So we're going to do favorite storylines of the year, biggest changes in the sport this year, athletes that were relatively new to the sport and had standout seasons, like a comeback player of the year type segment. And then we'll go into our UROY analysis. We'll do our picks. I think somewhere in there too, we'll talk about this new Trail Runner of the Year award system that Free Trail has created. And we'll sort of compare and contrast the pros and cons of that system to UROY. And then maybe we'll do our predictions for next year too. So this is going to be a thoroughly action packed episode. And, let's waste no time. Favorite storylines. Brett, what were some of your favorite storylines from this year in ultra running, whether it was athlete related or event related, whatever?
So So I guess sub question to the favorite storyline. Is this favorite storylines like now that the year's over, or was it like storylines that I was really looking forward to in January of this year that actually did stay fun the whole year?
Or like, I've got anywhere you want.
I've got like a little bit about that. I mean, so like looking back on the year, I mean, one of the most fun storylines to follow throughout the entire year was the rise of Adam Peterman. Because like every, I mean, we did the Canyons preview and we did the Western States preview, and I knew he would run well each race, but every single time he surpassed every expectation that I had, and he just kept doing it. And he has like continued to still surpass all my expectations throughout the whole year. And yeah, it's just been incredible. And I'm really excited to see what 2023 brings for him. You know, the Courtney show is always very exciting just to see, like, will Courtney DeWalter continue to dominate in the way she has? And like, yes. And it's like, still amazes me. At the beginning of the year, Jim Walmsley's move to France was very intriguing. And I was so curious just to see like what all would come of that, with this whole, you know, lifestyle change, to see if that is that what it takes to win UTMB. And I guess the jury's still out on that. Those were some of the bigger ones. I've got a few others, but I feel like they might actually mix into other parts of this episode better.
Yeah. So I have three major storylines that I really liked this year. First one was like the return of Dakota Jones. I think following him this summer at Hard Rock, and then I have
that written down.
Really?
Word for word. The return of Dakota Jones.
That's amazing. Yeah, the return of Dakota Jones. It was an incredible year for him, and he kept it so exciting. And I think, like, from Hard Rock to Javelina, two courses that couldn't be any more different, seeing him excel at both of those, and like not just excel, but like exceed expectations and excel at the highest level, and, you know, drop some performances and like finish Javelina the way he did after the summer of mountain running that he had. I don't know. It was really inspiring, and it was pretty cool to see after he had a couple few pretty quiet years there. So
yeah,
just crushed it all around, and really, really inspiring guy too. Second storyline that I really like is the return of Marianne Hogan. She did not race from like 2017 to 2021. Her first major race back was UTCT at the end of last year, and then just kept the ball rolling into this year with one of the very few podiums at both Western States and UTMB in the same summer. So yeah, watching her do what she did and hopefully come out of it the other side healthy into next year was also a really inspiring season for her. And then just general storyline was the North American women at CCC this year. I think we had 10 North American women in the top 25 in probably one of the most competitive, that had to have been one of the most competitive and deep fields we saw all year, and just pushing each other to like a considerably higher and higher level, with drastic improvements from the race last year. I think that was just a huge representation of where women ultra running is going, and just gets me really excited for the years to come.
These are all so, I love that we are all going to have three different favorite storylines too. Mine are the first one, the entrance of major athlete/personalities into the sport this year. So we saw Des Linden go on the record saying she is probably going to do whatever it takes to get into OCC next year. Super exciting. We saw Heather Jackson at Javelina this year. Massive triathlon personality, Iron Woman personality. She's going to do Western next year. And then Alex Honnold running an ultra as well. And I saw his post on Instagram, got 145,000 likes. And a part of me wonders, like, what are the second and third order effects of these three people saying that trail running is cool, it's a worthwhile endeavor, I want to run an ultra, I want to compete here. Like, what other athletes are they going to bring into the sport because they made that step? Maybe it won't be the case that we won't see this stuff, like the results of it, until, you know, three, four, five, six, 10 years down the road. But thank you to them for creating a bridge. So that's the first one. The second one is Fantasy Free Trail. I know that Free Trail is doing a lot of cool stuff in the sport, but I wouldn't be surprised, and I'm not even trying to undersell them. I wouldn't be surprised if the fantasy platform becomes like one of their biggest legacy contributions to the sport, because I think it like it's going to help grow fans. I think betting is going to be a thing in this sport, and it's fun for us too. So that was my second one. Three is, and this is super niche, it probably only benefits like us three, but the rise of these specialty creators like Trail Mix. I follow that guy on Twitter for like media articles, and then like Aid Station Fireball. I get a lot of stats from the best, like these people that just like have this super niche place in our sport, but they deliver so much value. And I know that they've given me a lot of wisdom to apply to these episodes, and you too as well. So those are my three.
Oh, that's good. I do think like my entrance into ultra running Twitter has been a highlight of my own year. Just like what an environment. It's my favorite. You learn so much. There's stats thrown all around. And yeah, it's been really fun to get into that this year.
Yeah, that's true. This has been my first, I would say like first full year on Twitter as well, of like actually opening up the app and reading things, and then like pretty quickly closing the app and being like, I'm done.
Guys, are we going to grow our Twitter followings in 2023?
I don't know. I've got like 86 followers.
I doubt it. I just comment on other people's things. I'm not really much of a.
I'm going.
I think. Are you going to do it? You're going to get a comma? Do you already have a comma?
No, I'm going. I have 867 followers.
Whoa!
Damn.
Oh, I'm crushing the game.
Dude. Yeah, no. Like, I think the last thing I actually tweeted of significance was like some day after a long run where I like poured the mac and cheese powder into the boiling water instead of the noodles. That was what I tweeted. That's the content.
That's quality content
on Twitter. That's like old school Twitter.
Yeah.
That's what I like. That's what I miss.
How about any big changes in the sport that stuck out to you? Again, coming from any angle, athlete, event, et cetera, related.
Yeah. Okay. So I did want to talk about Fantasy Free Trail as well, but you kind of hit that. So I won't go there. I think some changes to the Hard Rock Lottery I thought were fun changes this year, especially as it relates to women. I know we're not seeing like huge drastic changes yet, but the fact that there has been a change to the Hard Rock Lottery is progress, and more women than ever are running Hard Rock. I think that's an exciting big change, and hopefully more races can start implementing like equity into their lotteries in similar ways, but hopefully Hard Rock can start pushing a little bit more in that direction as well. I think following the Golden Trail Series this year was really fun. I'm not like super involved in the shorter distance trail racing, but just the media coverage around those. And I guess this applies to all of trail and ultra running in general, but I've loved the live media coverage this last year. I think this is the best year of it so far. And I think who was it? Maybe it was Aid Station Fireball or somebody on Twitter today was talking about the number of live streams that there will be this upcoming year, which I think
39, right?
39. Yeah. Which is really cool.
Wow.
So I think just media in general this year has exploded, and it's been really fun to be a very tiny part of that. And I'm excited to see where that goes as well.
Yeah. I mean, kind of, you know, slightly echoing what Leah said, like this was the easiest year to be a fan of the sport. Like in terms of following, you know, the most competitive races and kind of like already knowing who's going to be on the start line, just, you know, the storytelling got better. The live productions got better. And that just as a fan added so much more of a dynamic to, you know, watching the sport as opposed to, you know, just the classic, like refreshing Ultra Live or refreshing Twitter. Like we got to see like real humans moving on the screen, which was really cool. And you know, that's only going to grow more going into next year.
You guys got a couple of mine, maybe one more. And I noticed this when we heard Robert Merke from Adidas Terex talk about how their team is structured. I think We've seen a couple other brands follow suit this year, consolidating their teams and prioritizing, let's just say, 8 to 10 athlete team rosters as opposed to like 40, 50, 60, 100 person rosters. I think that might be the theme going forward for a lot more brands. I can't say for sure, but there's a couple that come to mind that seem to be following that lead. So I'll be curious to see like how that all plays out in the next coming years, but that seemed like a trend this year. And then it was the first year of the UTMB World Series, right? Like this was like the pilot year of the whole thing and like what the system will look like for years to come. I know that they're still adding events, but like the framework is there. And I know that there's been a lot of negative coverage around it. We've even had some not amazing things to say about it on this podcast, but I'll be very curious to see like how it shapes out in the next few years. And if athletes like, you know, Leah and Brett are attracted to it and want to invest racing time there. So those are the two that I would add.
Yeah. Another thing, I know we've talked about this a lot recently on different podcasts and whatnot, but is the revival of the World Mountain and Trail Running Championships. I think we saw a hiatus there from the last iteration of it. So I think it has a lot of momentum right now, especially leading into the 2023 World Champs in Innsbruck. So I think that was a pretty exciting trend we saw last year as well.
Yeah, that kind of leads into as well. It's like this was kind of the first full year of racing that we've seen in 2+ years now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we got like a full year of racing
from
beginning to end. And I guess what made this year really interesting as well was because there was kind of 2020 and 2021 of not a lot of racing, this year the names and the people who are winning these races are in the, you know, on the podium in the top 10, very different than in 2019.
Totally.
Yeah. You know, like if you take out 2020 and 2021 going from 2019 to 2022, quite
a great point.
There's definitely still some big names there, but there's a lot of new names.
Yeah. And I think too, something I wrote down preparing for this episode is like people are racing better and smarter than ever. And there's just like less carnage all around in racing, which I think has made it really exciting to follow this year. Less exciting as a competitor who thrives off of there being carnage in a race, but really exciting to follow because less people are DNFing races, I think, from my perspective, and like in the race for longer, which makes it a lot more dynamic as these races get longer too. So that was a big takeaway.
And Leah, you executed this to a T at Western States, and Brett, you put it in better words than I could have. But like, was 2022 the last year that suffering from the heat at Western States is like an optional thing? Like, do we now have the tech and the wisdom and the strategy to like take that out of the equation at that race?
I think so.
I think so. Yeah. Like, is the golden age of colossal blowups at Western States for the most part over?
I think so. I really do think so.
I think we're getting there. Yeah.
Yeah. I think like strategy, nutrition, all these things are spreading like wildfire on social media and Strava with the way that people do things differently. And I think people are picking up on what works for other people and applying it to their racing. And yeah, I think we're seeing people get better and have better race results because of that.
Yeah. People are figuring out a little bit more how to train for 100 mile. I mean, I definitely am not going to say people have figured out how to train for 100 mile, but it's looking like a much more complete picture than even just a few years ago.
Totally.
Brett, to your excellent point a moment ago, we kind of did have like a generational shift where a lot of new athletes rose to the occasion, came on the scene in 2022 with that 2-3 year gap from COVID. Who were some of those athletes in your mind that kind of stood out this year that I'm not going to say came out of nowhere, but like this was like their first year proving themselves on the pro scene?
I mean, does Adam Peterman count? He like came on towards the end of last year, but like a lot of people even still were like, well, sometimes people just do really well in their first ultra because they're excited, naive, and they don't know how much it's going to suck. But like, and then they're like, well, he ran D1. So like, of course, JFK 50 made sense because he could just go and like jog 6-minute pace. I feel like there were still a lot of people who wrote those races off.
Yeah. Well, the issue is like for Leah and I here in Salt Lake, like he came in last summer to Speed Goat and just like absolutely like ran roughshod on the course.
I know. Yeah.
And like for those who weren't there to see that live and just know Speed Goat as like one of the harder 50Ks, and then just to be like, oh, he ran it and like these people ran it this way. But like, what does that mean for a full year of ultra running? Like,
yeah.
Like, yeah, he's a really talented D1 athlete. And then to, you know, crush a full year. That was like kind of my reach for like,
it's a good debate.
Maybe rookie of the year, but going even like who, I mean, a name that just kind of like blasted themselves out of the stratosphere was like Jasmine Lothar at Canyons this year. Like, I feel like that was massive. And then to follow that up with a huge performance at CCC.
Yeah.
That was huge.
Yeah, I think we had a good conversation leading into this podcast about, yeah, what qualifies as rookie of the year? Is it an unsponsored athlete? Is this their like first or second years of racing ultras? Is this their first year like being really competitive in a major race? Yeah, so it's hard to define there. I had Jasmine on my list as somebody who really broke onto the scene this year. And another one was Rich Lockwood. Even though I know he's been in the sport for a while, I think this year, like in terms of results, we really saw him go above and beyond and surprise a lot of people. So I think he went from not a household name to a household name for ultra running fans this year, which is really exciting to see.
Also one of the, just the nicest, best guys in the sport, like the perfect person to have a beer with post-race.
Yeah, 100%.
I have two. John Ray on the men's side. In fact, I think that John Ray was a podium away at Western States from like being like very securely in my top five. Uroy, like he crushed it at Bandera. He crushed it at Javelina, only losing to Dakota Jones, who just had like a standout day. And I think he made just one or two executional errors very late in Western to unravel things there. And then Jen Lichter too.
Yeah, I wasn't sure where to put her because I think she like came out swinging last year with some big results and then just like kept executing this year along the same lines.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, that might be like another Adam Peterman example.
Yeah, it's like the like year and a half. Another name that I've written down that's like, I feel like just getting going, but has really thrown down some like big results that's still gone relatively quiet is Chad Hall.
Yes. Yeah, I had him too.
And his... Yeah, I feel like this was the first year of really his like true entry to trail. And he had some great ultra marathons as well as some sub ultras. He has good running genes.
Yes,
he does. Yeah. His brother is pretty fast.
It's kind of fast.
And he was, he was like one of my high school heroes because he was a couple grades older than me, racing in California. So like when I started to care about who was winning races in high school, track and field and cross country, it was Chad Hall and just the way that he was dominating these races. And then like ran decent in college and then kind of went triathlete cyclist for a while. To see him now go to the trails after having seen what I saw him do in high school, like there's greatness there. And I'm so excited for that.
Yeah. Last one along similar lines, because he got second place to him at Mammoth this year, is Garrett Corcoran from Salt Lake City. His year was great this year. I don't know if he cracked my top 10. He might've been like that 10th place spot, but a win at JFK, a pretty solid result at Speed Goat this summer, top 10 at Canyons, second place at Mammoth. And that's off the top of my head. Like just ran some really competitive races this year and nailed it in most of them. And pretty versatile. My husband Mike and I have been talking lately about the Speed Goat and the JFK in one season double. And not a lot of people have run under, what is it? Do you remember that? I think it's 5:45 at both. I think it's like Hayden Hawks, Adam Peterman, and Garrett. And
that's a great stat.
Maybe. I don't think
Jim not do it in the same year?
I don't think it was in the same year. I need to fact check myself.
Okay.
But it's a very short list of people. And I think that really speaks to versatility too, which is, just a fun conversation. Cause I don't think a lot of people could throw down at both JFK and Speed Goat the way that a couple of those guys did.
And you know what about Garrett? And this is probably credit to Mike and a lot of his photojournalism over in Thailand, but Garrett was very strongly influenced, I think, by everything that happened in Thailand and the U.S. taking gold in the 80K, and he is signed up for the breakneck point 42K in New York next spring, which I think is a qualifying race for Innsbruck. So it looks like the first half of his season is focused on getting one of those auto spots to the world champs, which is super cool.
Oh, that's exciting.
Is Dakota Jones our comeback player of the year? Like if we're moving on to this next point here and we're looking at like athletes that had comeback type seasons, like you guys already,
that's who I had.
Yeah.
I have a men's and a women's.
Me too.
I have Dakota and then I have Marianne Hogan.
Me too. Yeah. How about you, Finn?
Me too. I had a hard time thinking of anybody beyond those two.
Yeah. The only one I could also think about, but like not nearly to the same level as, Marianne, was Caitlin Gerben, coming off a year of full injury and then coming to third place at UTMB. But like nobody on the same level as Marianne and Dakota, I don't think.
Yeah. My honorable mention was Zach Miller.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Because he missed like pretty much all of last year. Got surgery on his foot, and built out of bus. And then just started – like then Zach Miller just started doing Zach Miller things again with like a – yeah, new foot and just like so much skiing and running. Just, you know, it was so cool. I mean, he finally went public on Strava, which was cool.
I was just going to say, he's a power user now. He's a power user on Strava.
What does Zach Miller do? Like, yeah, he is going to fill up Strava's servers with just the amount of activities he loads.
Yeah, I was in Conestoga, Pennsylvania this past weekend, and I did a run on this towpath, and like I looked up who's done it, and I saw Zach Miller just threw down like a sub 6 minute 16 miler on this towpath like a week ago. And I was like, dang, he never stops.
Awesome. Yeah, those are good. Okay, so maybe we got like a final four of comeback players, because Zach Miller and Caitlin are really good ones too. I think any other comments before we move on, like on any of these awards or rookie of the year type stuff?
Yeah, I don't think so. I just think rookie of the year is kind of hard to define. That's where I land on it.
Where does it start? Yeah.
Comeback player of the year was like easier to find.
Yeah.
Cause it was like, they didn't do things last year and then they did lots of things this year.
Well, we'll move on. And what I'm going to say here, maybe it's a little bit long-winded, but I think it sets the table nicely for the rest of the discussion. And I think it's all around like the validity of this current ultra runner of the year system. Like, do we think that it should stay the current way it is? Is what Free Trail is doing with Trail Runner of the Year a better system? Should we just make tweaks to what already exists? Leah, what are your thoughts here? Like, what are like the pros and the cons of the way we currently do it?
Okay. I want to know who gets these ballots. Number one for you, Roy. Like, I want to know every person that gets them. I want to know how often new people are added to that system. And I also want to know how objective it is that they rate each person. That's kind of,
those are great questions.
It is hard to make a top 10 for you, Roy, when our sport is so diverse by distance and terrain and specialty. So I left this top 10 UROY process for this podcast feeling like we should just have a top three for each specialty of sorts. Mm. So like road ultras, short trail ultras, long trail ultras, maybe something like that. Top three for each would be much easier, because it's really difficult to rate somebody who just does flat track 24-hour races against somebody like Jen Lichter, who's just run, you know, the three mountainous 50Ks in the Mountain West this summer and nailed them. So it's tough. I have a lot of feelings on T-Roy, which I don't. Yeah, I think you, Roy, I just don't think any of this should be like a people's choice, because that's just a popularity contest, really. But yeah,
good intentions.
Yeah, I love the idea. I think there might need to be a system that's people choice to some degree, but then also a lot more objective than is currently the process.
Gosh, those are great questions to kick this off. We don't know, right? I mean, as far as I'm aware, the whole system of voting, I think it's run, is it John Trent who ran Lakes or Tropical John Mettinger, I think maybe runs.
Yeah, it's John Mettinger.
John Mettinger, I think he is the orchestrator of the whole voting system. And then there's somewhere between maybe 40 to 50 voters. Yeah. And again, I almost don't want to speak any further than that because I don't know. I don't want to like misstate the way they have it set up, but my gut tells me that it's rare for people to be added to the system. And I wonder like what the average age of that voting group is too. Like, are there any people in their 20s that are a part of the voting group or people in their 30s? Like, probably not that many. I wonder if it's just people that, you know, were coming up in the sport in like the 70s, 80s, 90s. That's just speculation though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was, yeah, to kind of go off that question, like I realized, like, I don't know. I didn't know anything about you, Roy, other than that it comes out in the over the course of like 10 Instagram posts at the end of the year. And then I was like, wait a minute, where does that actually come from? And then like trying to get to the bottom of it, like didn't answer that many questions. I mean, in our text thread between us, like Finn, you sent an article from 2018 on I Run Far, which was Andy Jones Wilkins' method in voting for you, Roy.
Which, and kudos to him, by the way. Kudos to him for putting that out there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was probably the most, this was the most information we were able to find about the URI. And then even then it was still like, what I learned was that there's a giant spreadsheet that goes out to some number of people. We don't know who those people are. We don't know how long they've been doing this for, or if there's new people.
Yes.
They all, there's no set of rules, publicly at least, for like, how you should rank these results, whether it's like, do 100 milers in the mountains have more weight than a flat 50K, 10 good races or 10 wins at small races versus one win at a big race. Like there's no rule for that either. Like it just kind of sounds like you've been in the sport for a while. We trust your judgment, make a top 10, go. And I feel like that's actually exactly what all three of us did.
Come to think of it.
So, yeah, that's what I learned about you, Roy. And that kind of going off what Leah said makes it now having tried to do it myself and creating a top 10 list. One, it was very difficult. Two, it really made me wish that there was a much more accurate scoring system. You know, like everyone has like a UTMB index score. There's like an ITRA index score. I wish individual performances for every single race had a better, more accurate, like more in-depth detailed algorithm.
Yeah.
To just help me out by putting some numbers out mm-hmm. there. I need some numbers.
If you read that AJW I Run Far article where he goes in depth about his process, he's pretty, I don't know if Zen is the right word about it, but he's extremely thorough for sure. Like he's like, first I receive the ballot from John and then I scan the list and I color code things. And then I walk away from it for like 48 hours because I need it to like sit in my brain. I need to like think about all of these options. And then I spend like
eliminating the biases.
Yeah, exactly. And then he's like, then, you know, all in all, like the whole process takes me 18 to 20 hours. And then I come to my conclusions and I'm like, hell yes. Like that is awesome. And I don't know if everybody on that voting staff is like AJW, but I think that we need people with that care and attention getting to this system. As opposed to the masses.
This reminds me a lot of like the Academy Awards, where like at the end of the movie year, like the Academy creates all these categories and then people like the movies win. But it sounds like for the most part, most directors or movies like don't care at all about it. Like they don't make their movies with the intent to win an Oscar. Just like most of these ultra runners aren't doing these races with the intent of becoming you, Roy, but then they just like go about their way and do their year of racing. And then just like at the end of the year, they're like, oh, nifty. So there's some interesting parallels there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Is it interesting that this is a North American award, at least for the athletes, and we're judging a lot of these North American athletes based on their international performances? Like we're including all of those things into the mix?
I think we should. Okay. I think, yeah, it's North American because Ultra Running Magazine is a North American magazine. I know people on Twitter hate the fact that when we talk about UROY, we're just talking about North American UROY, but that's just what we do. So I don't know. I think we should be rating all the athletes on their international races. Yes. I think it would be very cool to do a international UROY of sorts, like Free Trail is doing right now. But
yeah,
I personally don't see anything wrong with it. It's kind of fun just to have a subset of our North American athletes and take a look at them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, after doing just the North American UROY and like making these picks and then thinking about having to expand that to World Ultra Runner of the Year, I feel like that's too big for like a person or a runner to win Ultra Runner of the Year. Or if that is something that can be won, it wouldn't be like a guaranteed win every year. Like it would be like the Barkley marathons where most years there's no winner, but every once in a while it might be like unanimously voted where they're like, dust off the World Ultra Runner of the Year trophy. And then they like, you know, bring it out of the closet and they're like, yep, someone actually won it this year. But I just don't know if could be a unanimously voted upon the type award. I could maybe see a scenario. No, it's kind of the same thing. I was thinking about like a single performance of the year across multiple categories. Like what was the biggest or like what was the best, you know, like long mountain ultra performance this year on the men's and women's side. And then, you know, maybe a 50K-ish type distance, sub ultra. I almost have an easier time wrapping my head around like a world best performance of the year instead of like one person over the course of an entire year. Mm-hmm.
Can I talk about this trail runner of the year system before we get into like how we reached our decisions for our top 10 male and female?
Do it.
Yeah, let's do a breakdown of that thing.
So first off, huge, huge shout out to Travis Longcar at Free Trail, who I think has built like an incredible, we've talked about this in previous episodes, but the system that he's built for athlete research and organization has helped us all immensely in these episodes. And he's created a pretty cool system here where basically if you have a Free Trail account, like one of the free versions, you can go in and you can make your top 10 picks for male and female. It's distance and event agnostic, except for the road, like road stuff and track stuff is not included, but like anything from like a VK up to like 100 mile, 200 mile trail stuff is those types of athletes are included in the voting system. And like, if you hover over someone's name, like Adam Peterman, for example, like you can pull up like his ultra sign up, his UTMB index, his social profiles, the races that he did in 2022, the results he got, the times, it's incredible. My only two gripes with the system are that they've limited the picks to 80 female athletes and 80 male athletes. They've basically pre-selected the 160-ish athletes that they think are worthy of consideration for the top 10. And then I think, as we just talked about earlier, the fact that it's completely left up to just the average fan out there who understandably, but regrettably, might not spend a lot of time researching the sport and like understanding these athletes and what they've done and how they stack up against each other. So Brett or Leah, do you want to fill in any gaps I missed in that analysis?
I think 10 people deep is about 5 people too many, maybe even 7 people too many for the people's pick. You know, I think like the average trail and ultra running fan would have a slightly better, like maybe even less biased time doing a top 3 versus going 10. I feel like by the time you start getting like 1, 2, 3, 4, then you're like, oh, 5, like 6, I like them, 7, 8, they're good, 9, 10. And kind of going off of what you said versus like 80 on each side of the men's and women's, a write-in spot. There needed to be a write-in on the voting ballot where you could actually just nominate someone else. If we're going to continue to go to 10 deep, I think if we go to 3 deep, that's not as necessary. But I just feel like for the most part, like 10 might've been too many. And I would love to see like almost a combination of the U-Roy and T-Roy together, where maybe there's an amount of weight towards the people's choice and an amount of weight towards the Academy's choice. And then maybe there's a overall, and then you could split the two and see how they differ. So I think there is definitely a world where both of these live, these competitions live harmoniously together.
I think one more cool thing is, especially with this whole database that Travis has built, he's preparing a whole generation of fans to be more, to have easy access to knowledge about all these athletes. So like never before in the history of our sport has it been so easy to like click on an athlete's name and find everything you need to know about what they've done, who they are, et cetera. And I do think moving forward, even though there might be flaws currently, we're creating a more knowledgeable and interested and invested fan base, at least for anybody that goes to that site. And I'm super excited about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, massive step. I mean, this is probably the hardest step to make, is this first one towards just getting this off the ground and getting into existence. So, yeah, that's huge. And yeah, nothing gets, you know, tweaked or fixed without it existing. So this needed to exist in the first place so it can get even better.
Well, for now, at least we have two competing systems, and I'll actually be curious when the dust is settled. I'll be curious to see how many people participated in Trail Runner of the Year. How widespread the voting was. Was it hundreds of people? Was it thousands? Was it more? And then how that grows over the years too.
I just think it's been interesting so far for like when people do publish their picks on Twitter, for example. Man, I'm just curious how people are picking their picks because these lists are drastically different. Yeah, it's wild to see. So I don't know. I feel like we're pretty like informed in the sport, and I would like to make my top 10. I haven't done that yet. But yeah, it's just crazy to see how vastly different people's lists are, and like probably how much bias goes into like the distances that you're largely familiar with.
I think
very true.
I think it's the perfect segue. Leah, can you talk about some of the factors that went into your top 10, like what your criteria looked like, for example, and maybe just some interesting questions you were asking yourself in the research process?
Yeah. So for my list, I was looking at a couple different things. One thing was variety of racing, competition that the athletes raced against, like depth. Yeah. Depth of the field. Dominance was a category. And Finn, I think I know Mike has shared his little spreadsheet he put together with you, but something we were looking at a lot was just like, general dominance in races. So that was something I was thinking about a lot. Oh, and consistency as well. So how often are runners competing at like the highest level consistently? And a little less towards number of races. I think if you had a pretty solid performance in like a bigger race or like a two or three races, that was enough. I think in the past, lots of races was encouraged, but I feel like these days, if you have a few like highlighted results, that's largely how I was considering people.
I want to throw this question out to you and Brett. How far does a single race go in your factoring? Like if you look at somebody like Hayden Hawks, who had a second place finish at Western States, but like maybe the rest of his year was relatively quiet, or like Zach Miller's top five at UTMB, but maybe only having like one other race to go with it. How much do you weight a single race like those two?
Good question. So I have some opinions on this because I feel like there's so many races these days that it's hard to get by with just one amazing result like that. I know we've talked recently about, golden ticket winners, and is that enough to get you sponsored, just by just having one great race. My argument to those two specific examples you gave are like, no, those races don't go far because neither of those two ended up in my top 10. So yeah, I think you need to have, more of a list.
burn.
I don't know. What do you think, Brett?
I think two performances could get you in the top 10. but they had to be, they would have to be massive, which mm-hmm. none of the people who really had like, you know, like if we're pointing out like Zach and Hayden, like I would slot Zach higher than Hayden just because Zach had 200K plus results kind of close together as well. Like, I guess going to my criteria, a couple of things I wrote down were like big performances and like the size of the stage, mm-hmm. Which kind of leads into just like the clutchness of the performance because maybe you go out and blast Tunnel Hill 100 in like 13 hours or 12 hours or whatever, but nobody else is there and there's no pressure on you. I think the clutchness in which if you can show up and win a race with tons of other people also there racing on that day, I weigh that pretty heavy into, you know, the weight of the performance. So then if you can pair that with consistency as well. So if you can consistently line up on very competitive stages and be at the front, like time and time again, and then like tiebreakers, I have head-to-head matchups and then the number of races like very last. So like if the head-to-head matchups like didn't exist or anything, then like I would look at like the races that they did and maybe someone had a higher number, which I actually don't know if I had any that went like that far deep. Like there was a couple where they raced a few, you know, quite a few times, but then it's like looking at like the quality of the race, like what was it for? Who did they beat? I put a lot of the weight on like the size of the stage mm-hmm. for these races that these people were in. And there needed to be like two at least like heavy hitter mm-hmm. races on their schedule.
Lee, I don't mean to steal your thunder here because you asked this excellent question in the pre-recording, but like if you think about like Joe McConaughey, who had a really impressive performance at the Cocodona 250 earlier this year, Jeff Browning winning the Moab 240, what Camille has done on the track, how important is it in the voting for there to be other like high profile athletes in competition with those athletes at those distances and events, in your opinion?
I think there needs to be. I don't know. It makes it really hard to rate people when they have not raced competitive fields, in my opinion. It's really tough, especially at distances that not a lot of people have participated in. So you bring up the Cocodona and 200 milers and whatnot, and we don't have a lot of people that are racing that. So it's really hard to compare and contrast results. And like, how amazing is this result given the fact that, yeah, not many women have done this. Or like Camille, for example, like her world records at the flat track races and flat 100 milers, they're amazing. But how many people are out there competing, going for these fast 100 miler and world records at this distance? I think it's a really interesting conversation, and it's one that it made voting and ranking people a challenge because I think lining up against significant competition is a big player in how I view my top 10.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I guess, well, so one thing that I know, what was my depth deepness quote of the year?
Yeah, the depth is just so deep.
The depth of the women's Uroy was so deep. Like when I started doing my homework for this, like the list of names got so long, like quite a bit longer than on the men's side. Like the men's side, I had an easier time boiling down a top 10, but I just feel like the North American women as a whole just blitzed this year of ultra running.
Yeah, I mean, and to quote your own text, Brett, you said the women's Uroy is destroying my brain. And you know what? Like, I agree. It was a tough one. Like, my hot take is this is the deepest women's Uroy we've ever seen. Mm. But
I agree. Yeah.
And what, are there any other years in recent history that you compare this to, or what made you reach that conclusion?
You know, I don't know. Most recent, like the most recent years are very hard to base them off of because like last year there still wasn't like the high quality and high caliber races that we saw. So I think it's especially interesting to compare top 10 from last year to this year where you could have raced like two decent races and been in the top five.
That's a great point.
Yeah. Whereas I also think people are just competing at such a high level these days. And I think in the past, there was not nearly as many races to pick from and compete at such a high level, in my opinion. Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't comparing this necessarily to any very specific recent years that I could think
of. No, that's a good point, though. I think that, yeah, what you mentioned there about the 2 to 3 year gap that we've had and how that's disrupted the ranking system. And this is like the first year of like a return to normalcy where people have like a full year of racing to do and to prove themselves with. Super interesting.
Yeah. I mean, and historically too, you know, ultra running hasn't had like brands haven't sponsored as many elite women as men in years past. And now that gap is starting to get smaller and we're just seeing, you know, more companies like contribute to like these opportunities, they're not, you know, they're not being taken for granted. Like they're not getting wasted. And like ladies keep showing up and like absolutely crushing these races. Like, yeah, like there's just like of the lit, like the giant list, I wrote down a whole bunch of race results. And like the number of times I wrote DNF was probably the least of any other years. And I think that just, yeah, like the consistency is just pretty amazing. And then also just looking at like the number of different races across the spreadsheet that I made and being like, oh, well with this many races, surely they couldn't be that all that competitive of fields. But then you go and look at the results and they all were.
I got to point out one thing before we get into like our picks. I don't know why this cracks me up, but you, Roy, this whole award system is presented by DryMax, a sock company. I feel like it should be like a more like badass sponsor, like put
Ferrari,
like Ferrari or something like that, but it's a DryMax.
Oh man.
I mean, DryMax has the fastest socks.
Oh my God. I just, I had a couple thoughts just cross my mind that are unrelated to DryMax, but one is,
That's okay.
Yeah, sorry to not continue that. One is which races 5 years ago would have been heavy hitters in this ranking that are no longer. Two come to mind. Well, I mean, North.
Great question.
Yeah, that was something.
Yeah.
And then, what was my other one? I can't remember my other one.
Well, let's go on that first one while you're thinking. I mean, North Face, obviously, right?
Yeah, North Face 50 miler.
North Face 50 mile.
Like red hot 50K, 55K, whatever it is. That used to be huge. And like in my list here, like Brittany Charbonneau raced that this year, Aaron Clark, Tyler Green, I believe too. And like a lot of people raced it, but it's not nearly as deep as it used to be. Another one that comes to mind is Lake Sonoma, which this year I think we'll see it kind of go back to past years. But like Lake Sonoma this year did not have nearly the depth that it used to. So I don't think that can pull a lot of weight in these rankings.
Yeah. Way too cool. 50K.
Yeah.
As well. Like it did have strong performances at the very front, very similar to years past, but, you know, the results, you know, like 10th place wasn't as fast as 10th in, you know, 2017. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even something like Way Too Cool, like they've moved away from the lottery because they're not filling up their 1,000 person, cap space. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, those are definitely some races that have, I guess, unfortunately become less significant, but, you know, I guess that kind of comes with the territory of trail and ultra and that it's kind of a fluid moving thing. That's just, it's kind of going to be forever changing. So it'll be interesting to see in like 4 or 5 years, what races will be relevant or less relevant, you know, than they are now.
I'm looking at some of these 2016 Ultra Runner of the Year race results, and I think Courtney DeWalter got third this year, and there aren't any like standout races, like in terms of like what we would consider today to be like a really highly competitive race. Like her resume that year was Run Rabbit Run, Javelina, Hideaway, Continental Divide, San Juan Solstice, Collegiate Peaks, Greenland Trail in Vegas Moonlight.
Three of those races are still pretty competitive. Like Solstice, Javelina, and...
But, you know, no Western, no UTMB, no European races. Just very interesting.
Yeah. Can you be on the podium of UROY without a UTMB or Western States result?
Yes. I think.
Yes.
Because
you can too.
Yeah. Someone that comes to mind who's because... like just one place off, but oh yeah, like David Sinclair. I think I would put him in a podium spot this year without one of those results.
Oh,
Devin Yanko.
Yeah, I actually did that.
Yeah. Devin Yanko is another person that comes to mind. I think she's one spot off the podium for me, but like she had a great year and I think would be another person like that. Good question though.
That's a great question.
Yeah. So we're not like full in on like, I think that's good.
Yeah. No, I agree.
That it's not to that.
Because I think there's arguments against UROY every year. And like, I mean, we'll see what it looks like. But a main argument is you needed to be in the Western States top 10 to be on this list. They always say it's like, oh, it's all California races. It's just Western States. Mm-hmm. It's this and that. But I don't know. Looking at who I've found this year, there's not necessarily the top 10 from Western States by any means.
Okay, I'm still on this 2016 page. We at some point in time, we need to do an ultra running Where Are They Now episode.
Ooh, that's good.
Like, where is Andrew Miller? Like, what is he up to these days? Oh. Like, what a crusher.
He's living in Corvallis, and he is a coach.
I email with him occasionally.
Go on. Next person. Let's go.
Let's see. Where is...
Brett Hornig, PI.
Like... Who and where is Brian Rusiecki? Like
East
Coast Crusher. Like, this list is sweet. Like, he got on the list with like Georgia Death Race, TNF Bear Mountain, Massanutten, Vermont, Bull Run, Mountain Masochist, Manitou Revenge. Like, what a burly East Coast schedule.
Yeah.
Like, nothing sexy on there from the West Coast, but he's number 7 of the year. Like, 2016.
Yeah. That'd be fun.
That's cool. Interesting.
You know, whatever happened to Ian Sharman? Whatever happened to Caroline Bowler? Where are they now?
I think Ian Sharman, he's still in Bend, and I think he's just had some injuries on and off.
Yeah. Anyways, we got to do an episode on that one day. Fun.
Where are
they? They never left. I just haven't been paying attention. Leah, do you want to start to bring us through your women's top 10?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Oh, this is tough. So I'll start from the bottom and go to the top. My number 10 is Jen Lichter. Dominant year across mountain 50Ks. She won Broken Arrow in a course record. She got second at Speed Goat, was running a really stellar race and took a navigational wrong turn at some point, and then ended up fighting her way back to second place. Won and then was probably third fastest time ever at the Rut this year, probably about a minute off the course record. And then won a small 50K in Montana. So really solid 50K year. I think she was lacking a little bit in the depth for me to put her much higher. But yeah, insane year. And I think one of my projections for this year was the fact that she would win all the big mountain 50Ks, and she was kind of on her way to do that. Mm. Ninth place, Annie Hughes, huge long list of results. And I think like a lot of people would probably rank her a little bit higher. And
you're going to get blasted.
I know, I'm going to get blasted for that. I just want to see more depth in terms of race distances and competition with Annie. I think she knocked it out of the park with all the races she did this year, winning, I don't know if you guys have the stats, but probably 4 100 milers at least, and then winning Cocodona as well. But, okay, then I have myself in 8th place. I don't need to talk about myself though. I got Camille in 7th place, Jasmine Lothar in 6th place. So Jasmine, I think we've touched on her, just had a stellar year with Canyons, first place, course record, Chuckanut, third place, and 4th at CCC. Really amazing year. Got Katie Scheid in 5th place. Katie didn't have a lot of racing this year, but when she did race, it was top notch, like a win at UTMB and I think one of the top three fastest times ever, and yep. win at UTMB Val Duran. And then I think she just had a marathon at the maxi race. So can't count that towards her UROY ranking. Devin Yanko in fourth place, win and second fastest time at Javelina, win, I think overall win at Umstead, course record, really fast 100-mile time, and just a slew of fast 50-milers and other races on her resume this year. I feel like she is a pretty consistent racer whenever she's on, and I know she had some ups and downs with her health this year, but yeah, really solid year for Devin. Third place, Abby Hall, huge international year for Abby. I don't know that she raced once in the U.S. this year. I think it was all international. So
yeah,
I think podiums in all of her races too, actually. So Trans Gran Canaria, second place, mm-hmm. Trans Vulcania, first place, third at CCC, and then first at an Innsbruck 80K, I believe, 60K or 80K. Got Marianne Hogan in second, first at Bandera, third at Western States, and second at UTMB. And then Courtney DeWalter with just another hell of a year with Dagona Defu, Hard Rock, right? I don't know. My mind's fuzzy. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of results. I did that all without looking at a sheet of results.
That's impressive.
I did, yeah.
The listeners won't appreciate how impressive that is, but we're here. We saw that.
You just moved up a spot in the UROY for naming all those results. And like I was fact-checking you. I have my spreadsheet up. I can see it all.
That's a commentator of the year award right there.
Yeah.
That's it.
One thing that I want to point out in that list, you mentioned Abby did all of her racing over in Europe. I wonder if when we do this again in 3 or 4 years, the percentage of athletes in these top 10s that will have the vast majority of their resume over there, and if that will become like a distinguishing factor. Like, do you need to just like move over there and race in the same way that like I'm watching the Drive to Survive thing on Netflix right now with F1, like they all go to Europe. Like you don't spend time in America.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Devin Yanko is a good example that you don't need to if you just have some really, really solid results here in the States. But I think you need to, have historically great times if you're staying in the U.S., in my opinion.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Brett, do you have any bones to pick with that top 10? Are there any places you would swap out people?
I mean, well, now I'm just like second guessing everything I wrote down. Like we both have Courtney DeWalter as number one.
Yep. Well, yep. Let me ask you this, Leah. Why'd you leave Claire Gallagher?
I was just about to say that. She's right on this list too. I mean, she was first at Black Canyon, first at Leadville, second at San Juan Solstice. Solid results. I don't know. Yeah. I don't have a good answer. It's just, it's so freaking deep. I just don't even know where to put people anymore. Like Hannah Allgood's not on there. Tara Fraga, mm-hmm. Taylor Nallen, Aaron Clark, Brittany Sharpnow. Yeah. I could go with Sarah Beal, all these people. Mm. It's too hard. Claire probably, I could probably slide Claire in there and knock somebody off, but then who do I knock off? You know?
It's true, yeah. Did you have Caitlin Gerben in there?
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
And like another name that like I struggled with, I left her out of my top 10, but it was tough, was Ilsa McDonald.
Oh yeah.
Getting second at Western States and then first at the Whiskey Basin 91K. It's like massive results, but just two, one of them being, a less competitive race. And then like just a massive Western States. And I think in most other years, that's good enough to get into the top 10. But this year, everyone above her had like a similarly large race plus another one plus a couple smaller tune-ups. So like that was one of the contributors to, like leaving someone in or out of my top 10. Should I get into mine?
Yeah, run through it.
Let me make sure. Like I have like 20 names. Let me make sure I at least have the 10 correct ones highlighted. 2, 3, 4. Like number 28. So I have Caitlin Gerben as number 10, edging out number 11, Devin Yanko.
Dang. Okay. Wow. Yeah. We are.
And I know. And ours, like, and like, I kind of put Caitlin in the top 10 because of the podium finish at UTMB, like making a world's team, running pretty well there. And then like having a decent, like couple 50Ks in the Trans Gran Canaria earlier in the year. Devin Yanko also had a pretty wide range of racing, but also did have a few DNFs thrown in there, which were like little blips on the scale. Ninth, I have Jasmine Lothar, which my nine through four are like, could all be flip flopped. So, and that was, I mean, I think the only real reason was there was like a couple, like, I guess a couple head to heads with CCC. And then I don't know if I should dock points or not for like just knowing that Jasmine was supposed to start Western States, but then didn't. Like, yeah. I guess you probably shouldn't get faulted for that. No. But that's just more like, I wish I could have seen that performance. And then eighth, I have Annie Hughes. And I know there's not a lot of variety in there. And maybe that's like internal bias of like having never been that good at 100 milers. To just be able to hit like one, two, like four of them and a 200 miler in 1 year. It's like, that's a lot of running, and to be pretty consistent across that, like, yeah, sure. They're all 100 milers, but in terms of the total time for all these races, like, I think it was pretty different. Leah, I've got you at seventh because I didn't know you went over to Trans Gran Canaria.
Mm-hmm.
Underrated performance
and Gorge. Yeah, that was very surprising. Like that bumped you up because you had like two international races, as well as you actually raced. The only person who raced more than you, I think, was Devin Yanko.
Yeah, she raced a lot.
But you did as well, and like you got points for being very consistent across all your races, which, I mean, that kind of goes in suit with your racing style and like doing your homework before these races and just like executing race plans. And then I guess, yeah, a hugely different name for, what number am I on? Five?
Six, I think.
Six. Claire Gallagher.
Oh, nice.
A win at Black Canyon, 100K, and then second at San Juan Solstice, and then to follow that up with a win at Leadville. Especially the Black Canyon and the Leadville runs were very impressive, especially like having watched a ton of the Black Canyon live streams. Like, Claire's such a gamer. She's so good at just like racing when you need to be super clutch and just race really well. Into my top five, I have Abby Hall, which I think I'm probably going to get blasted for having too low. But this one was tough. Abby Hall had an amazing year of racing. Like, yeah, four international races, but you know, that's just kind of the scope of the sport now, where not all the most competitive races are in the US. You know, like, there's very competitive races in Europe where like you could easily throw yourself into the Euro contention not doing any, you know, North American races. Camille Herron in fourth, for just, you know, sheer dominance on the road ultras, and then also in a top 10 at Western States. You know, to just every time you're starting one of these races to get an American record or a world best or a world record. I don't know if we'll see a runner like that again for a while on the like road and track ultras. And then for second and third, I struggled with this one. So then I had the head-to-head tiebreaker matchup. So third, I have Marianne Hogan. And then second, I have Katie Scheid.
Wow.
Yeah. And I mean, Marianne maybe came into UTMB on slightly tired legs with the Western States, but like they raced each other, and UTMB is just, there's just so much pressure at that race. And just like, you know, I mean, you guys were there. It's like, it just sounds like the start of the race and waiting for it. The whole lead up process is just such a nightmare in terms of just the palpable feeling of nerves. So then to be able to just go out there and race for that long to win UTMB. So I guess I rank a UTMB win as pretty high on the list. Yeah. And then number one on the ladies ultra run of the year is Courtney DeWalter with, yeah, wins at Madeira, Hard Rock, and the Grand Raid, and the Rough Canyon 50K. I don't actually know what that race is, but it's another win. Finn, what do you think?
I'll run through mine quickly. They're not terribly different. I only have one person here that neither of you named. So 10, I have Camille Herron. 9, I have Taylor Nowlin. And I'm a big believer in her Western States CCC double. Like, she got 7th at Western, 9th at CCC. Off the dome, knew that without even looking it up.
You'll do that with your whole top 10.
All right, Finn's going in my top 10, you Roy.
And I think it was like a 4th at Black Canyon too. So I think she had a really well-rounded like 3-piece year. And then Claire Gallagher at 8. Leah, Katie Scheid, Jasmine Lowther, who I consider to be the Canadian Claire Gallagher, just a total gamer on race day. Abby Hall, Marianne Hogan, Courtney DeWalter with the win.
Was Courtney unanimous, like in both of your minds?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, unanimous.
Even after writing it all out, I was like, yep, I agree with what I thought before.
Yeah.
Getting wins, like, gosh, could you have, like, of her 3 big wins, if you had taken out one of them, does she still win you, Roy?
That's a good question.
The only,
like, if you win Hard Rock and Grand Raid, I feel like you win the Euro.
Yeah, especially because she did them in historic times.
If it's like Hard Rock and Madeira,
probably not.
Hard Rock was still a historic time, but like it gets more debatable.
Well, Madeira was a course record too, right? I believe.
Yeah, it was, but under the like standards of Courtney DeWalter, it wasn't a massive course record. And if that's what we're having to nitpick for,
I think that her race at Grand Raid was arguably her greatest performance of all time to date. And there's only just a part of me that wishes that could have been done at like a slightly more higher profile event, so that more of the ultra running fans out there who don't necessarily pay attention to Grand Raid could like put it into perspective, because it was truly amazing.
I agree. And I've had,
yeah, the Grand Raid's an interesting race. Like,
we shall,
in terms of like when it is. Sorry, Leah, I totally cut you off.
No, I was just going to say we should all go next year and do it.
I know.
I was just about to say, like, I don't know why anyone's doing a hot and humid UTMB.
Her only hiccup was Barkley, right? I think she's tried Barkley a couple times now. And I mean, it was Jasmine Paris this year that got the fun run done. And she still hasn't quite cracked the code there. So that surprises me.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on the women's URI? Not much debate at the very top, although Brett, the Katie Scheid at 2 is a somewhat hot take.
I think that's a hot take.
Yep, totally. I agree. Someone needed to do it. I mean, I just think choosing the women's top 10 was a lot harder than choosing the men's top 10. I'm not saying that we're all going to agree on the men's top 10, but I think that if we did have to like sit in a room and we couldn't leave the room until we agreed on the top 10, we're figuring out the men's first.
Well, did somebody, one of you two suggested doing that on this episode?
Yeah, that was me. That's never again. My bad.
Be here all day.
You're right. That was before I wrote it all out.
I don't know. I guess a big takeaway, I think I mentioned this in our pre-recording, was just how difficult it is to rate certain performances. Like Marissa Lezak, who just excels in these 24-hour events. I think she nailed it on 3 occasions this year, once at Spartathlon, and then ran 150-plus miles on 2 occasions in 24 hours. How does that rate? It's hard when that's the only style of racing she does to kind of fit her into this top 10. And somebody that nobody's really talking about very often, but yeah, it makes it tough.
Yeah. And that side of the sport has a little bit less depth at the current moment, so there's not quite as many people to compare to. across, yeah, just performances, head-to-head matchups, depth of competition.
Yeah, and here's all that good stuff. Just an interesting stat to compare and contrast this year's to last year on the women's side. So Sarah Beal just ran a pretty massive course record at JFK and had some other great results on her resume this year. And last year, Sarah Cummings, my good friend, had won JFK in, I think, one of the top 3 to 5 fastest times ever. And she was 5th at UROY last year. And we don't even have Sarah Beal in any of our top 10s. So I think that's
so an interesting thing. The Academy likes JFK. Okay.
That's a great point, Leah.
Yeah.
I mean, that flows perfectly into that whole discussion we were having about like what races matter this year versus even 3 years ago and how quickly times change. Leah, you want to run us through your top 10 men?
Yeah. Yeah. So I got Chris Myers, number 10. I'm not going to be able to know these stats, but like I did for the women. But yeah, he threw down at a lot of 50Ks this year and just broke a Rob Krar course record at the what's that race that just happened in Arizona, Aravapa. Yeah, really solid fast guy. I got Rich Lockwood in 9th, winner of Run Rabbit this year, and I think 2nd place at Gorge 100K and very recent 2nd place at the UTMB Thailand race. Tyler Green in 8th. Tyler's just the most consistent guy alive and ran a bunch of 50Ks this year. I think that was his style going into Western States. So he did Red Hot, Gorge 50K and Chuck a Nut, and did quite well in all of those, I think getting top 5 in all of those. So he's my number 8 with a really solid race at Western States again as well. Drew Holman, number 7. John Ray, number 6. Arlen Glick, 5. Dakota Jones, 4. David Sinclair, 3. Jim Walmsley, 2. And Adam Peterman, 1.
Oh, Adam Peterman, yeah. 1.
Easy decision.
Easy.
Easy. Are you serious?
I'm going to have to agree with Leah on this one because I want to win Fantasy Free Trail. I don't know if that's how it works, but I'm totally copying your answers.
No bullying allowed on the Single Track Podcast, but I will go to the bat for Jim Walmsley here.
Really?
Yes. Oh, let's hear it.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead. We'll try.
So I have Adam Peterman as number 1 on the UROY as well. So that's 2-1. You lose. Yeah.
I told Brett in our last Long Run Archives episode that 2023 was going to be the year that I went and pursued my bachelor's degree in international ultra running from the University of Single Track, with distinction. And
you're going to your own school.
that came out wrong.
I thought you were going to say University of Phoenix. Okay. No, I think when you were talking to me initially, you did say University.
I think I did. Oh my gosh. Anyways, I'm going to go get that bachelor's degree. Okay. We're taking night courses. I'm going to learn everything I can. I'm going to consult all of the gurus out there. But anyways, I say all that because I'm definitely much more appreciative this year, I think, of where like the centers of excellence are in the sport. And I do believe that if you're going to seek out the best competition in the world, it's over in Europe right now. And Jim Walmsley did all of his racing there. Madeira, UTMB, Les Templiers, won Madeira. I think he set course records at both. And then I think a 4th place finish at the most competitive mountain ultra trail race of all time counts for, I would put it, I actually think it counts more than a 1st place finish at Western States this year.
Interesting.
And that's,
I guess there's definitely the debate of if Jim Walmsley ran Western States this year, was he beating Adam Peterman?
It's a great debate. And by the way, I say all this with absolute love and admiration for Adam Peterman. Like I think amazing guy for the sport, nicest guy in the sport, seems like the chillest guy in the sport. Like he seems like the most psychologically evolved person I've ever seen in our sport. He just seems like nothing. He seems unflappable. You could be like, I hate you. And he's like, that's okay. I love you. And you're like, what? He's amazing. So like, I can't say a single bad word about him, but, I think that Jim Walmsley subjected himself to better competition for the year.
So So we have four races from each of them. That was how I looked at it. So I looked at it, I was like, they have four races. How do they compare one against the other? And I kind of put Madeira and Canyons head to head. I put Jim's Ultra Tour de Bellefontaine up against Chuckanut. I got UTMB versus Western States, and then I got Le Templier versus Worlds. And I kind of tried to basically, like, if you take like the top five in each of those races and put them together, they all race Madeira, and then they go and all race Canyons, which team is winning each of those races, just for the depth of competition. Like, how does Adams win at Canyons versus Jim's win at Madeira? That was in my head how I broke down these tiebreaker races.
Leah, do you think that's a fair comparison, Madeira and Canyons?
I don't think so, but
yeah,
I think there's other, yeah, I think Adam's results are higher than Jim's, in my opinion, but I don't think Madeira and Canyons are a good comparison. No offense, Brett.
Of the
eight races, yeah, there, like, what would you have compared Jim's Madeira to in terms of Adam Peterman's?
Well, Canyons, yes, but I would have had Jim coming out on top in that head-to-head comparison.
That's true. Adam wasn't, like, to his...
Yeah, like, David, like, Sinclair ran with Adam for a lot of that, yeah, race. So.
I feel like Adam, he's... Jim tries to bury people in, mm-hmm, races. Adam is kind of taken more of the Max King approach to do what you need to do,
yes,
to win
a
race. And Adam hasn't quite, like, and maybe that's due to his like, just,
yeah,
demeanor of, like, he's gonna win races, like, not try and
kill himself.
Dominate. Although he has said that he would love to try and run the course record, yeah, of Western States, and, like, it's gonna take that,
I think so,
to do it. So then it's like, gosh, like, how much was Adam Peterman actually pressed this year? He won all of his races. How hard did he actually try?
I don't think we saw like 95%+ out of Adam Peterman yet this year.
Dude, that's scary. Mm-hmm. He might have not gone to the well.
I don't think he did.
One thing I will say, as I'm looking at Jim's results here, like Ultra Tour de Beaufortaine, I now firmly believe that if you just throw the prefix Ultra Tour in front of any race, automatically your perception of that race's prestige increases by like 10%. So good on Beaufortaine for making me think that maybe Jim had a slightly better than he did. But I don't know.
Let's hear the rest of yours, Finn. Who else you got below? Wait, Brett, did you do yours? Yeah, you did.
Yeah, Brett hasn't done his yet. Sorry, we got... Yeah.
No, I didn't.
That was good discussion.
Didn't even matter. So my top two are Jim Walmsley and Adam Peterman for 2 and 1. Going back down to 10th, I had Jonathan Ray for 10. And then Tyler Green at 9. And then we were talking earlier of like Tyler Green versus Drew Holman, vice versa, because they both beat each other once this year. One's at Chuckanut, Drew beat Tyler, and then Tyler beat Drew at Western States. I actually split them with Zach Miller and his super clutch fifth place at UTMB, and one of the just most insane UTMBs of all time. I'm now saying it out loud. I put a huge amount of bias in my picks on UTMB.
I think you did, yeah.
No, I definitely did. I'm having like an aha moment. Seventh, I have Drew Holman. Which his Ultra Trail Cape Town podium, you know, threw him up in the rankings. And then fifth, I have Arlen Glick, which I don't know if his year this year was as good as last year. It's hard to say because he like definitely did some more different things this year with Western States and Run Rabbit. But then like going back to Javelina and not running quite as well. And I think he had said that too, where he's like, I didn't quite get in a race where I felt like I executed everything. Fourth, I have Dakota Jones, the Hard Rock Javelina double Yeah, that was very impressive. And just to see it, like, to see the Javelina run firsthand, like how dialed that was. He just looked so steady all day. Dakota Jones has very good running form.
It's beautiful. Like,
I was telling, yeah. I was on a run with Anthony Costalis on Sunday, and I told Anthony that there was a time when I thought Anthony had the greatest stride in ultra running, and then I watched Dakota Jones at Javelina, and Anthony dropped a second.
Yeah, yep. I mean, it's true. Like, Dakota looked the same at mile one as mile. He looked better at mile 99 than at mile one, which is, yeah, it's wild. And then third place, I have David Sinclair with the second place at Canyons, and then the Broken Arrow, Speed Goat, the Rut trifecta. Was he the first person to do that? Mm. Did we say that?
He was. Yeah. Okay.
I think he was.
Dang. Men and women? I'm assuming, yeah, that's, so. Probably.
I think so.
I believe that's cool.
Maybe someone could fact check us. That's pretty incredible.
And breaking a Killian course record at the Rut.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Anytime you're breaking a Killian course record, you're getting.
I forgot about that, there. Leah. And some of the best style in ultra running. Like, he wears those like dad Hawaiian shirts sometimes, and the knee savers. I love it. Yeah. And like poles at Canyons.
Yes. And I think my greatest find of the week.
Oh, yeah. That was a hot take.
Greatest find of the week is that David Sinclair is only 30 years old. So he's got another many years of racing left under him. So it's going to, yeah, all these guys are just young and spry.
Yeah, there's some youth. Yeah, David Sinclair, if you're listening right now, the knee sleeves threw us all off on your age. We were all thinking like the Masters are like shaking in their boots, but
nope.
It's just preventative maintenance. It's just preventative maintenance.
He's doing what we all should be doing, really.
Yeah, we should all be wearing the knee sleeves.
That'll be a part of our prediction segment. I'll run through mine quickly. My 10 spot was... Well, my 10-11 spot was Jared Hayes and John Ray.
Oh.
And gun to my head right now, I'm going John Ray 10. Hmm. Rich Lockwood 9. Hayden Hawks 8, which I'm sure is a hot take for some of you. Drew Home Run 7. Arlen Glick. Zach Miller 5, which might be another hot take in this group. Dakota Jones at 4. David Sinclair 3. Peterman 2. And Jim Walmsley 1. So at least we're united on David Sinclair being on the podium.
I feel like your whole top 10 is one single hot take.
Yeah. It's, you had Dakota up there enough where I'm going to agree with you on that. But I mean, I guess the last person to win Uroy on the men's side, not named Jim, was David Laney in 2015. Whoa.
Great stat.
Maybe it was 2015, I think. Yeah. Because we had a Uroy party for him here in Ashland, and we all wore mustaches. So you think Jim will win it again?
I think Jim is winning again.
I just don't think so.
I think Jim is winning again. Yeah.
I think the Academy is going to be biased towards Adam's patriotism towards his country and racing in the States. Mm-hmm.
Buying local, racing local.
Yeah.
Yep.
My bias was definitely also Western and UTMB. If you had a really good result at one of those two races, I weighted that very heavily. I just think that that's where the talent is concentrated in our sport when it comes to like the 50 mile and up distance. And so Hayden Hawks running that gutsy second place finish at Western counts a lot for me. Zach's fifth place at UTMB, almost running down, I don't know how far behind Walmsley was he? Not like crazy far behind.
Far enough.
But was he far enough? Mm-hmm. Well, fifth, and so I don't know.
Yeah, and I guess to add, not that this would put Hayden in my top 10, but he is racing this weekend.
Yes.
Abroad somewhere.
And I felt like he was speaking to the voters of Uroy in his latest post. He was analyzing his season.
I know. I've been watching people
only
do
a few
that.
Days left in the year.
To whom it may concern, here's what I did this year.
Yeah, you know what? I want the people, like at least the top three of Uroy, like the people who actually win it from the Academy. I want them to record like a 60-second speech.
Yes.
Of like, I would like to thank, and like, I just. just want to hear how, I don't know, great or awkward that might be.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're done.
We did it. I know. It was a lot of names, but it, yeah, this was a good year.
I do want to end on predictions for next year. So similar to like our favorite storylines and themes for this year, any things that we see taking shape in 2023? I'm happy to go first, but do either of you have any interesting predictions that the listeners might care about?
Let me see.
I didn't have a prediction, but I had what about like a, this is what I would love to see next year sort of thing.
Well, Brett, you have an awesome prediction. I already know one of them.
What is it?
2023 is the year of the exogenous ketone.
Oh yeah. Well, because 2022 was the year of high carb fueling. Oh. I feel like high carbohydrate fueling went so viral this year. And the cycling world is just continuing to take over. And like, no, 2023 is going to be the year of broken ankles with carbon plates and trail shoes. That's what it's going to be. That's a hot take. I want to see Adam Peterman and Jim Walmsley race each other. I don't care where it is or the distance, because they are so even across 100 meters to 100 miles. Any race would be exciting because their track PRs are almost identical. Mm. Like, even if it's them racing CIM road marathon in December, I would love to see that. I will go watch that in person.
Yes. Me too. What do you think Adam and Jim could run at CIM?
If they're running CIM next year.
Yeah.
Are they training for, like, when do they start preparing for the marathon?
September.
Ooh. Based off of what Jim's been doing and based off what Adam's been doing, like, if Adam just continues to do, like, the more runnable ultras and then September switches to CIM, I bet Adam's got, like, a 212, 213 in him.
Nice.
On like the first go. And Jim, I think like 214, just because he'll have done like a full year of like big Euro mountains. If he was living over in Flag and doing his like Western States type training, I think it's also in that 212, 213 range. But I bet I'm going to get blasted for those times. But y'all don't know how fun CIM is.
Any other predictions?
Oh man. Well, so Courtney DeWalter is on the Bandera 100K entrance list. So it's under the assumption that she's trying to run Western States. Well, I'll have to go do a little bit of digging, but like, when was the last time like the previous two UTMB champions then raced each other like outside of UTMB? And like, not only that, it got to be at the other big stage being Western States.
That's a good question. I think one of my next year predictions was that Courtney DeWalter breaks the course record at Western States.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm sure she's thinking of that, because the year she hurt her hip, she was like on course record splits all the way to the river, just about.
I think we also, sorry, this is opposite topic, but we had a conversation piece about like what happened in 2022 that like you either expected to happen, or what happened in 2022 that you didn't expect.
Yes. Yes.
Would happen. I'll go first, because my one thing that I thought would happen that I was going to tweet about before it happened, and I should have, but I was nervous about being wrong, was that Sarah Beal would break Ellie Greenwood's course record at JFK. And she did, but I'm too nervous to write that in words on social media.
Trust the brilliance.
Why don't you throw it into the Twitter sphere?
I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I think mine there was going to be Trueheart Brown racing into the top 10 at Western States this year.
Mm.
And he never even got to show up because he was being a great public servant, fighting fires.
Yeah. I didn't think Killian Jornet was going to start an entire brand. Like, I know that has nothing to do with the Uroy, but like things I thought and didn't think, like that was one of the first things. I was like, I did not see him leaving Solomon and then just starting his own brand. That's really cool. I also didn't think Adam Peterman was going to win Western States.
Really? I don't even know what I thought anymore.
He didn't have any intention of ever running Western States.
That's true.
Right.
Oh, I guess that's true. If you were thinking about the end of 2021 going into 2022, what we would have expected.
Yeah. Now he was like, that's like multiple years away. Like, I'm not going to do it. And then even after Canyons, he was like, I don't know. 100K was really far. I'm very tired.
I didn't think that Adam Peterman was going to be criticized for waiting 2 weeks to decide.
I know. I was about to say that.
That might have that awoke the beast. Like, he might not have run Western States had it not been for social media existing.
So actually, we talked about a potential defensive player of the year award, and you could argue that Adam Peterman being awaketh to race Western States and winning it prevented Hayden Hawks from getting his first win at Western States this year.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I like to think that Jennifer Lichter was Jennifer Lichter's own defensive player of the year because she went off course at Speed Goat and perhaps would have won it in maybe a course record time that would have given her the trifecta of Mountain 50Ks winning this year.
Yep.
That's a good one.
Tom Evans was a great defensive player of the year for keeping Jim Walmsley off the podium at UTMB. Because had Jim been on the podium of UTMB, that might sway me onto Team Finn a little more. I'm not saying it would, but it would definitely be a lot more argument.
See, I think the entire top 10.
Podium versus not.
I think the entire top 10 at UTMB is a podium.
Not for you, Roy, though. Like, no. We're talking the pinnacle. This is the pinnacle.
I got a couple more predictions for you guys because I wrote out a whole list. I was kind of stoked on this section. I think that Arlen Glick and Courtney DeWalter are going to podium at Western and Hard Rock next year. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see the emergence of even stronger and more numerous live coverage personalities. So obviously, you know, Dylan Bowman, Corinne Malcolm, a great pair. They do an amazing job. I think there's going to be more Dylan and Corinne's in the sport. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see more non-endemic sponsors partnering with athletes. And And more talk, I think, about athlete contracts, like in the same way that we interview people to talk about like how their training is going and how their racing is going, stuff. I think that contract stuff will become a more normal part of the like media athlete relationship as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think this is going to be a huge year for trail running shoes. Every single, like most of the major brands are now like for 2023, they are throwing their road technology into trail shoes. I say huge year and not great year because I'm still not convinced that that's going to work. But I bet of the like 10 brands that try and make a trail super shoe, I bet one of them figures it out. And like that will kind of set the tone moving forward. And there's going to be a lot of interesting footwear out there. And it won't just be like the standard, like not every single person's just going to be wearing the Hoka Speed Goat. Mm.
And do you think there's going to be clear winners and losers? Like there's going to be like brands that create a carbon plated super shoe, for example, the trail version, and they're just going to be like a subpar version of it. And you'll see athletes like jumping ship because there's going to be like that one shoe out there that has like a clear, by far and away, performance advantage, like the trail equivalent of like that Nike Vaporfly.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that there is going to be that big of a jump between like pre-Vaporfly and post-Vaporfly existence. Like, I feel like the trail world's kind of never quite swung that much in either direction in terms of like performance enhancing footwear. But I mean, my hot take, I still think carbon fiber on the trails is for the most part dumb. And all the running companies are not going to like me saying that, but it hasn't worked yet because carbon fiber is stiff. And when you add stiffness to rocky trails, you get hurt. So maybe they'll figure that out though.
Leah, any other predictions or just any other thoughts? We've covered a lot in this episode, but maybe we'll just do like a little final thoughts round here.
Yeah, I'm just curious how competitive UTMB will be next year, and then how will even rank some of these UTMB races in next year's UROY, for example. It's going to be, yeah, that'll be interesting to me. Other predictions? Gosh, I don't know. I feel like we've hit a lot of them.
Who wins Western States next year, in your opinion, Leah?
Courtney DeWalter and, oh, who's racing on the men's? Oh, Adam Peterman. Yeah.
You're just too modest to say so.
We all know you can run sub 1730
yeah,
there.
You know what, guys? We'll see.
Cool. Well, hey guys, this has been awesome from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much to both of you guys for making this a way better podcast than it would have been solo. I'm excited to see what we can kind of come together for in 2023. I'm sure we'll do some cool stuff around the Golden Ticket Series and Western States and UTMB and stuff. But until then, wishing you both happy holidays, happy new year. And thanks to everyone that listens to us on a regular basis as well. We love it. And as Brett has said in previous episodes, if you have any strong feelings on anything we've said on this podcast or in previous ones, shoot us DMs on Instagram or Twitter. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to keep the conversation going. Thanks for listening. Before we sign off, if you are a fan of the show, please consider supporting us with a rating and review in your podcast player, a donation on Patreon, or the use of our sponsor discount codes in the show notes. Thank you so much for your consideration. We really appreciate your support. Until next time, I'm your host, Finn Melanson, and you have been listening to the Single Track Podcast.